Welcome to this week's edition of a World Crisis Radio. This is your host, Webster Tarpley, speaking to you from Washington, D.C. And this week, I believe we can offer what amounts to a world exclusive, the kind of analysis that we try to deliver. I think we can deliver some today. And it revolves around the great questions of war and peace, specifically Syria. The Assad government, once again, threatened by warmonger elements here in the United States, in particular by those bankrupt and stupid parts of the intelligence community who were so focused on their hatred for Assad that they neglected other more serious threats coming from this attempted Tamer Lane operation, right? Timur Lang, we can read Christopher Marlowe's version of Tamerlane the Great, how a very small force can, under conditions of social breakdown, become a real threat. Anyway, those bunglers are still at it. Here's what it comes down to. We warned you that Republicans are warmongers. Republicans are warmongers. There are no significant exceptions because they're all appealing to the same warmonger, bigoted, racist base. That includes little Rand Paul. That includes Cruz. That includes every one of them. They all have to be warmongers because otherwise they cannot compete. And they want to compete. So there it is. So here it is. We warned you. We ran a whole campaign here. Arrest McCain for ISIS. Hashtag, right? Do it sharp, right? Sharp. Arrest McCain for ISIS. Jesus. Arrest McCain for ISIS. Okay. And now what do we get? The Republicans win significant gains in the recent election. And what happens? Within 10 days, you're back on the brink of war. This is what it comes down to. Now, the leading edge of this is a report coming from Ed Royce. And, of course, Ed Royce is the Republican chairman of the House Foreign Affairs Committee, chairman of the United States House Committee on Foreign Affairs since 2013. This guy represents the reactionary precincts of Orange County, Anaheim, Fullerton, Ed Royce. So he appeared on CNN's New Day. New Day. Sounds vaguely Freemasonic, wouldn't you say? New Age, New Day, doesn't sound so good. But, in effect, this is the program with the son of Cuomo, Cuomo's son, the younger son, not the governor, but the other son. So Ed Royce appears on the CNN New Day, and he says, there is a policy review involving Syria going on. According to Ed Royce and a couple of other unnamed sources cited by CNN in a wire on Thursday, the 13th of November, President Obama has asked his national security team for another review of the U.S. policy towards Syria after realizing that ISIS may not be defeated without a political transition in Syria and the removal of President Bashar al-Assad, senior U.S. officials and diplomats tell CNN. That is a cabal. That is a warmonger cabal attempting to carry out a warmonger coup. The review is a tacit admission that the initial strategy of trying to confront ISIS first in Iraq and then take the group fighters on in Syria without also focusing on the removal of Bashar Assad was a miscalculation. This all from unnamed sources. Then we get to the heart of the matter. Representative Ed Royce, chairman of House Foreign Affairs, said Thursday morning on CNN's New Day that he had also heard that the White House was shifting its strategy in part because Turkey and other Gulf states, which are hosting refugees from Syria, were pushing for the removal of Assad. Now look at this situation. Obama was in the Far East, still is in the Far East, right? Going from the APEC meeting in Beijing with President Xi of China, with Putin, going on then to Burma, Myanmar, for a meeting of ASEAN, Association of Southeast Asian Nations, and currently on his way to Australia for the G20 in Brisbane, Australia. He's traveling, as far as I can see, with Susan Rice. Kerry, warmonger Kerry, skull and bones Kerry, is traveling in the Middle East. And indeed, there was this big thing yesterday, I guess it was, on the Thursday of this week, that Kerry was meeting in Amman, Jordan, with King Abdullah of Jordan and Bibi Netanyahu, who I'm sure he brought his Bibi gun, since he's Bibi. So that's not a very promising group either. I'm afraid Jordan has degenerated into a kind of a satellite of the Mossad. Not much more to be said about that. But we're left then with this idea that there's not just a policy review, but a policy review with a very definite angle. Time to bomb Assad. That's what they call a policy review. Force through such a policy review. Now, fortunately, this has then been denied. And this was also a couple of hours later. Looks like it was about 11 o'clock in the morning on Thursday, the 13th of November. Here we have Ben Rhodes. We've crossed swords with this character in the past. Deputy National Security Advisor. So Susan Rice's right-hand man. And he's traveling with the president. Maybe Susan Rice is actually back in the White House. I have to track down some of these things. However, he says the Obama administration is not formally reviewing Syria policy. So here's what we then get, not just Ben Rhodes saying this stuff, but a senior administration official had told the network the following, quote, "Developments on the ground have caused the national security team to collectively conclude that we may not have time for Iraq first." This official goes on to say, "In an ideal world, you will drive ISIL out of Iraq and pivot to Syria. But if by then the moderate opposition in Syria has been smacked and ISIL is still there, that doesn't help." So, and once again, the report about the policy review suggested that the U.S. could implement a no-fly zone, a no-fly zone against Assad's forces, or accelerate and expand the train and equip program. But Rhodes says no, no. Back in a minute on World Crisis Radio. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. And we've got a scoop. I think we're the only analytical operation that has figured this out. I'd like to thank my good friend JC of the Proletariat, also famous on Twitter under various screen names. JC of the Proletariat helped figure this out. So remember now, we've got all of these leaks going to CNN, not just to CNN, but to Elise Labatt, Elise Labatt. We hear Elise Labatt from time to time on National Public Radio Friday morning, Diane Rehm Show, International Policy Review. She seems to be a creature at the State Department attached opportunistically to Madame Clinton and now to Skull and Bones, Kerry. So we've had this senior administration official saying, who knows who this is, Kerry or Rice, I would guess. We may not have time for Iraq first. Now, the issue is a no-fly zone against Assad's forces. Well, that's a huge air campaign against Syria. This is, of course, what Erdogan of Turkey and his sidekick Davutoglu have been demanding. And the answer to that is no, no, 1,000 times no. Rhodes then asked, what is the real story, says senior advisors have indeed been looking, and I'm quoting, looking at what the relationship is between the actions we're taking against ISIL and the political transition. But then it's much softer on Assad. Ben Rhodes, deputy to Rice, says he would not rule out, quote, he would not rule out the prospect that you could defeat ISIL absent a political transition within Syria. In other words, it's perfectly feasible to defeat ISIL without overthrowing Assad. Rhodes says there have been regular meetings, we're aware of about four in the week of the elections, the previous week, first weekend in November. Rhodes acknowledged that there had been regular meetings with the president, where Obama has joined in with his national security team on the issue. Rhodes says, clearly no one is satisfied with the situation in Syria as it stands. We haven't been happy with that. We're always going to be taking a hard look at what more we can do to effectively degrade and ultimately destroy ISIL and then have a transition to a stable Syria. Okay. Certain degree of double talk. Rhodes, of course, designed the television coup against Assad in the summer of 2012, July 2012, attempted decapitation of the regime of Assad. Now, what could the trigger for this be, right? Why now with this stuff? Well, on the one side, Republicans have gained power, more members of the House, indeed more members of the Senate. Can we look at Royce and say he's a satellite of McCain and Lindsey Graham and the Amigos and Kelly Ayotte, that clique, warmonger clique? Quite possible. The other thing, though, is have we reached a threshold of effectiveness in the U.S. bombing of ISIS and similar terrorist groups, right? Enemies of civilization all the way, nothing to be done but the use of force. Very sorry. This is the way it is, regretfully, but this is the way it is. And they've been, of course, they've been created by the U.S., Saudi Arabia, NATO intelligence, but it's like Hitler. Once the Frankenstein monster is coming at you, you've got to do something about that. Now, I'm going to just try to mix in two elements here. You remember that Kerry has a track record. Kerry's track record is that if we go back to June of 2013, Kerry was demanding an immediate attack on the forces of Assad. Remember this? And interestingly, it was occasioned by a development on the ground. The fall of Qusair, the city of Qusair near the corner of Syria that faces Lebanon, key pathway for logistical deliveries and so forth by the various corrupt pro-Western political elements in Syria. We don't need to go into who they were. But the idea was that this, the, probably the biggest single military turning point of the entire Syrian civil war is when the Assad forces, backed up by Hezbollah, took over Qusair and kicked out the various terrorists at that point, different, you know, mix of organizations, but that was the idea. Within a couple of days, Kerry was demanding the bombing, and you'll remember we focused on this quite a bit when it happened. There was a clash then between Kerry and General Dempsey. And General Dempsey said, you don't know what you're doing. You don't have an entrance strategy. You don't have an exit strategy. You don't seem to realize that this would require the complete destruction of the entire Syrian air defense system and landing fields and all the rest. And it was then Kerry was rebuffed. Notice he did it in a meeting where Obama was not there, and he demanded immediate bombing of Syria in a meeting where Obama was absent. And that seems to be the idea, except this time Obama is even more absent. He's on one of the longest trips of his presidency. He's out of touch. Therefore, I would say to Obama, watch out. The mice are playing, right? When the cat's away, the mice will play. These are not mice. These are monsters of warmongering. And let's just also see this other angle. When Dempsey was talking to Kerry back in June of 2013, Dempsey said, look, do you realize what you're asking for? We would have to wipe out the Syrian Air Force, air defense, radars, missiles, and all that. At that point, Dempsey said, that's at least 700 sorties. Go back and look. Now, what we've got now, as of the 24th of October, and I'm sorry, I can't find this. There's nobody who publishes this stuff. You know, we don't have the ISIS sortie count. But by 24 October, 6,600 sorties, most of them fueling, refueling, and reconnaissance. But of those, 632 sorties were actual airstrikes with 1,700 bombs. And it looks like it's taking a toll. They almost killed one of the top people. They did kill some last week. Maybe that's the trigger. Back in a minute. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio, Webster Tarpley here in Washington, D.C. So we're following the attempted war coup triggered by, on the one side, the new power of Republican warmongers in Washington. You'd think that would have been an issue in the election campaign. I tried to make it an issue. Arrest McCain for ISIS. Not just warmongering, but warmongering against a Frankenstein that you yourself have created. And on the other hand, the fact that the cumulative effect of the U.S. bombing, despite the scorn heaped on this by the reactionaries, the defeatists, and those who actually want a wider war, they say bombing isn't enough. We demand the ground troops. Well, Operation Inherent Resolve has had significant effects. So 632 of these air sorties were actually bombing runs. 1,700 bombs dropped. Heavy casualties for ISIS around Kobane. We're going to see a program on Friday night. By the time you hear this, you'll have to go and look at it, look for it in the archives. But on MSNBC, Richard Engel, dubious character, but he's been in Kobane with the Kurds, and he's been interviewing. So Engel will by now have said what he's going to say, and it's going to be interesting, because if he plays up the bravery of the Kurds against ISIS, that ISIS can be defeated, can be killed, then maybe some wind is blowing, right? Different factions choosing sides on this attempted war coup, I would guess by Kerry, McCain, and their various cohorts. But now, Let's look at some of the answers. There was testimony on Capitol Hill yesterday, and here, the usual team, Hagel and General Dempsey. Hagel wearing a Band-Aid on his left cheek. Did somebody slug him? Did Susan Rice come at him with a stiletto? I don't know. But here's this is a very interesting clarification. According to this, Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel shot down reports that the Obama administration is considering a change of targets in its first fight against, in its fight against the Islamic State. And this you can get on Al Monitor, the Middle East source. So he is asked by Jackie Speier, Democrat of California. She is, interestingly, against training and equipping the Syrian democratic terrorists, right? The wonderful Free Syrian Army of Terrorism, interchangeable in a moment's notice with al-Nusra and or ISIS or anything else. Hagel says, Assad is part of the equation, of course, but just alone dealing with Assad where we are now, that's not going to put ISIS, the Islamic State, back into the box. And turns out that the substance, we have a memorandum from Hagel, which talks about these same things, right? This goes back to October, early October. So there's a memorandum from Hagel to Rice, early October, saying the U.S.-Syria policy is incoherent. Now, much of the coverage of that memo had tried to portray this as Hagel saying, we've got to attack Assad as well. And it turns out, in reality, it is the opposite of that. He has said the opposite of what many of the warmongers wanted him to say. Getting back to the hearings yesterday, Thursday, the 13th of November. He says, actually, this article, and this is Al Monitor, Hagel wrote a sharp memo to Susan Rice last month urging a sharper focus, sharp, on solving the year-long conflict in Syria. But he says the Islamic State is the main target. Quote, we could change Assad today, and that's not going to change all the dynamics. Who are you going to replace Assad with? What kind of an army can take on ISIL? There is an operational planning conference this week. This is another trigger for these events. An operational planning conference at the Central Command headquarters in Tampa, Florida this week. 190 military planners from 30 nations laying the groundwork on how to deploy forces against, the ISIS, people. And then he does go on to say, look, the position of the United States remains that Assad has lost the legitimacy to govern, but there is no purely military solution to the conflict in Syria. Alongside our efforts to isolate and sanction the Assad regime, our strategy is to strengthen the moderate rebels, and on and on. All right. So this is extremely interesting. And let's think about what we might compare this to. Well, there is the famous moment in March 1999, the wounded Clinton, having just escaped conviction after being impeached, was skeptical about, as we reported it at the time, skeptical about bombing Serbia, but Al Gore gave the order while the Russian Prime Minister Primakov was flying across the Atlantic. He turned back when he got that news, and the possibility of a negotiated solution was out the window. It could have been had then as it was had later. That's one. But let's, I'm thinking of another one, an even more horrendous one, from the U.S. point of view at least. And that is the infamous Cable 243. This is the cable that was issued by Averill Harriman, also of Skull and Bones, Skull and Bones Kerry, Skull and Bones Averill Harriman. This is August 24th, 1963, just before the Kennedy assassination. And it is a cable that was written principally by W. Averill Harriman, Roger Hilsman, and Michael Forrestal, a stooge of this faction, right, having this family heritage. President Kennedy was on vacation at Hyannis Port, and Defense Secretary McNamara on vacation, even CIA Director John McCone, for whatever that's worth, on vacation. This was the one Kennedy put in after kicking out Alan Dulles. So Kennedy is at Hyannis. Forrestal calls and says, we want to put out a cable, in effect, encouraging the military in South Vietnam to have a coup, right, to overthrow President Diem, kill him, kill his brother, and set up a military dictatorship. Kennedy says to Forrestal, speaking for Harriman, wait until Monday, we'll get everybody back to Washington. But Forrestal says Harriman wants to get the cable out right away. Kennedy then said, get it cleared by somebody else. Harriman and Hilsman recruit other State Department officials. They send it out. They do it behind Kennedy's back. And the result is within a couple of weeks, the assassination of Diem. That's the moment when the U.S. lost the Vietnam War. Skull and Bones Harriman, Skull and Bones Kerry, beware. Back in a minute. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. We've reviewed and we will continue to review the tremendous success of the Tax Wall Street Party and Tax Wall Street United Front Against Austerity inspired candidates. If you find that a national destiny appeals to you, don't hesitate to get in touch with me directly. Go to tarpley.net, tarpley.net. You should be going there anyway every day to catch up with all sorts of things. You can follow the Twitter from there. But in particular, go to the Speakers Bureau feature, and there's a contact device in there, right? You can contact me, send it on in. Goes direct to me. And if you're interested in running for office, you want to volunteer for other supporting other candidates, you want to be a campaign manager, you want to be a media director, whatever you want to be, this is all purely volunteer. This is to promote the survival of the United States and the world. The American people have an inherent right to live and survive. We're interested in putting that into action. So let me know what you're thinking. And we also want you to we're going to be talking quite a bit about our pro Pinckney mobilization, right? We're trying to help Reverend Edward Pinckney, our good friend from Benton Harbor, Michigan, indeed from Michigan in general, internationally recognized spokesperson, avoid the monstrosity of being buried alive in a life sentence. Now, resentment of the bunglers in the intelligence community is intense. The New York Times on the 29th of September noted that the Syria hands, the specialists in the area, many of them neocons, were so fixated on their hatred of Assad that they ignored ISIS. They let this thing come out of nowhere. The effectiveness of the bombing, well, on just about the same time frame that the anti-Assad people in the administration made their covert move when Obama was out of town, this was the bombing of a convoy with a number of top ISIS leaders, and it was thought for a while that Baghdadi had been killed. Now, there is now a tape by somebody purporting to be Baghdadi. I'm from Missouri on that one. You have to remember, when you look at, Tamerlane, right? When you look at these people, look at Attila, Genghis Khan, right? When the top guy dies or gets killed, things tend to fall apart. You're dealing with something of this sort. And by the way, we're seeing people on television say, oh, look, there's a whole array of other candidates who could take over as the caliph of Islam. Caliph of the Islamic State means the emperor of an Islamic world empire, which by definition embraces the entire world. It is a translatio imperii, the movement of the empire from one place to another. It had been in Constantinople with the Sultan of the Ottoman Empire. Now it has been revived. However, his immediate associates are, to a significant degree, officers of Saddam Hussein's army. They cannot be considered as the caliphs of Islam. They are not religious figures. They are largely, secular, where they were. And you've got to have credentials, right? Above all, you've got to be descended from the Prophet Muhammad in order to be considered. You've got to have a colorable claim that you're directly descended from the Prophet Muhammad, right? Otherwise, that's going to be a hard, hard row to hoe. So you get the idea. The other thing that's going on with Hegel, which I think is interesting, you'll remember we called attention on the eve of the election to a couple of firings in the personnel at missile silos. This is in particular Minot Air Force Base in North Dakota. And since it seems to fall to this broadcast to at least pose questions and perhaps speculate a bit about what's going on politically inside the U.S. armed forces, right? We know a lot of flag officers, generals, and admirals were given the sack after Benghazi. Was that a 7 days in May operation? We know that in August of September 2007, we had the rogue B-52 going from Minot, North Dakota, to Barksdale, Louisiana, with nuclear weapons, on the way to the Middle East at the same time that the Israelis bombed something inside Syria. And we know that Cheney had been arguing unsuccessfully, as it turned out, in the internal councils of the Mad Dog Bush the Younger administration to attack Syria. He tells us that in one of his biographies, I guess, biographical writings. So, the nuclear review by Hegel, it is being marketed as this kind of stuff, right? Remember the $500 toilet seats, right? When you want to get people's attention, I think it's a diversion. We're told that there's one wrench for 450 ground-based ICBMs in the U.S. arsenal. Largely, they're in Minot, North Dakota, and surrounding areas. Now that's going to get everybody's attention, but what's going on in the background? Think about that movie, right? White House Down, and the guy wants to launch nuclear attack, right? You launch a nuclear attack, you can get the U.S. into a war. And you'll remember that one of the features of 9/11 was an exercise that involved a bad rogue insider trying to launch nuclear missiles at somebody, and that would have led to war there too. So we've also got stories of a general uprising in the Middle East. The contacts made by ISIS with the terrorists who have been plaguing the northern Sinai Peninsula, that's one example. You've got any number of groups that have announced that they're gravitating towards ISIS, right? Is there an attempt to overthrow some of the remaining governments, Syria, but also then maybe to create one of these Tamerlane horde operations and launch that against who? Iran? Against Russia through Chechnya? things like this have to be seen. We also have the hyping, and perhaps this is factional also, of the United Arab Emirates. The Washington Post on Sunday discovered a love affair with the Emiratis, a quiet, potent ally to the U.S. American generals called the UAE Little Sparta for its ability and willingness to fight, by Rajiv Chandrasekharan, right? This was the daily life in the Emerald City, right? He's a veteran of the original Iraq debacle. All of this stuff would indicate that an attempt is being made. And again, my guess is Kerry, probably this General Allen. Remember, he was part of the Benghazi operation, was then ousted because of his contacts with Jill Kelly. But that's not the real reason. He's come back in through the back door with Kerry. So we've got Kerry and Allen. Bad news. And then we've got other forces, right? We've got McCain, we've got Lindsey Graham, we've got Ed Royce, presumably a part of that. They seem to be pushing. And indeed, one of the tremendous failings of the Democratic Party is remind people who the warmongers are, assuming it's not you. Of course, when you have Rhodes in the White House. There were four meetings last week with Obama, stuff going on quite intensively. It's time to get on Twitter and go for arrest McCain for ISIS. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio, our second hour. It's the November 14th, 2014 edition, and without further ado, we want to go to Benton Harbor, Michigan, to talk to a great friend of this broadcast and a public figure who is fighting the good fight for everybody who wants to avoid a dictatorship and indeed fascism in this country. That one of the heroes of this fight is our friend Reverend Edward Pinckney. His story has been written up in Counterpunch magazine. And the Black Agenda Report, Glenn Ford, fine people over there that we've talked about in the past have covered it. But obviously we need much more. So Reverend Pinckney threatened, as we know, by life imprisonment, an absolutely outrageous and impossible threat. So welcome, Reverend. Tell us the situation of the fight.
Well, Weston, first of all, let me thank you for having me on your show. I mean, it's an honor and a privilege. But the fight is just really beginning. Like I told them the other day, that this was just a shot in my knee. It wasn't a shot in my heart, because my heart is still pumping for the people. And I'm willing to go, if I have to jail, if it's going to help everybody. Black, white, Mexican, poor, it don't make a difference. We're in a dog fight that nobody would ever forget. And on last Saturday, there was a Republican Party meet, and the sheriff got up and said that we got Reverend Pinckney. And they gave him a standing ovation. And they said this guy called. Matter of fact, he just called me today and told me we got Reverend Pinckney, and we have won this battle. Webster, I could not believe what I heard.
It's shocking.
Yeah,
it's outrageous.
And even the verdict, I would never believe in a million years that they would find me guilty with absolutely no evidence. Even the forensic said, I cannot tell you that Reverend Pinckney did anything wrong. And yet and still, 12 people said I was guilty with no evidence, none. And I told them, this fight has just begun. It's just begun. I'm getting ready to put on a fight of bliss that they would never ever forget, because I'm out here every day, and I'm still going to meetings. I'm telling them what they're doing is wrong, and I'm going to continue to do it because it's all about the people.
Reverend, it's obviously a runaway jury, and that sheriff, whoever that, I guess it's a Republican sheriff who said they got Reverend Pinckney, that guy has got to be fired.
Oh, absolutely. We need to find somebody to run against him because they could beat him because he's not really well-liked, not even by the Republican Party. But this is the biggest thing has happened in this community by them convicting Reverend Pinckney. By convicting me, he put another feather in his hat because that's what they want. And let me tell you this. When I was on the show before, I told you how they went to the clerk's office and took those petitions without a warrant, a subpoena, or a court order. They broke the law, and he's responsible for it. But nobody would take a stand and say, hey, you were wrong. Nobody but me. I'm the only person willing to go chest to chest and eyeball to eyeball with them. But I tell you one thing, Webster, I'm happy today, though. I'm happy that I'm able to fight for the people.
Reverend, we think it's very important to mobilize the OSCE apparatus. You remember back in the 70s, there was this conference in Helsinki, Finland, which made human rights an obligation of all the signatories. The U.S. signed it, Russia, everybody in Europe. Right now, your case, I think, falls under the OSCE guidelines, and there are monitors, there are watchdogs. Every foreign ministry has this, and what we're working towards is having the foreign ministers of the principal European countries and any country we can get to convoke, to summon the U.S. ambassador and saying we demand explanations about this outrageous human rights violation. Similarly, the ambassadors of those countries here in Washington go to the State Department. They ask to be received there and make the same demand. What's with Reverend Pinckney? That's a huge human rights case. How dare you hypocrites and racists here come forward and say, something's not right in Russia or some other place, right? When you've got this terrible criminal violation, as you've just said, taking place in Michigan.
And, that would be tremendous because somebody has to step to the plate and tell these people that what they're doing is wrong. See, and they act like I said, the sheriff gets up in the meeting and say, we got Reverend Pinckney. We got him. And when they give him a standing ovation, what kind of justice, with no evidence, what kind of situation is that for the United States to go around spreading anything about being good for the whole world? You know, they always got their nose stuck in somebody else's business. And here you got so many problems here that it's not even safe to be walk the streets around here.
Absolutely. Reverend, repeat now how people can help you, where they can, and where journalists and other people of goodwill can contact you and so forth.
Very good. You can go to bhbanco.org. That's bhbanco.org. You can call me at 269-925-0001. That's 269-925-0001, or you can mail me a check. We need $20,000 to fight these people. If I don't have the resources, they just going to run over me. So I know there's people out there who has resources. I'm asking you to help right now because I need your help. I can't beat these people down with what I have. The resources I have, I can't beat them down. But we can do it together. And you can go to bhbanco.org. Or you can call me at 269-925-0001 or mail a check to Banco, 1940 Union Avenue, Benton Harbor, Michigan, 49022. And we're going to win this battle. I mean, this is a lifetime battle. This is not just something that's going to end now. And we're going to win. And I'm saying this, and I'm saying it from we're winning right now. Because right now, they're talking about Senate violating my human rights. So we can do it together and fight together.
Absolutely outrageous, and the world needs to know. I mean, I think basically one thing is to make this the focus of the human rights, civil rights, constitutional rights community. Anybody who is interested in any of those has got to help you. And then there are such things still as pro bono or otherwise cooperative civil rights, human rights lawyers in this country. And this is a very obvious case for them. So we're trying to pursue as much as we can in all those directions.
And you know, absolutely. And I want to be on that conference call with you Sunday, too. If you could send me that number to be on, I will.
Sure thing.
I'm going to try to be on and maybe enlighten more people, give you more details exactly what's happening and how we can help each other and spread this word around the world. Because people have to know what's going on in Benton Harbor, what's going on in Detroit. It's criminal. That's what it is. But we have no outlet. We can't go to the FBI. They're not going to listen. We can't go to the state government. They're not going to listen. We can't go our own government. They're not going to listen. Nobody's going to listen unless the people take a stand.
All right, Reverend. We know you're going to keep fighting, and we're going to do whatever we can for you. And there's certainly Counterpunch and the Black Agenda Report that gets the ball rolling. I'm hoping that a rather well-known broadcaster is going to get in touch with him in the next couple of days, and we're going to try to set up a number of contacts. So we'll see you next week, and more power to you. And we'll be back on World Crisis Radio. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. Webster Toffoli still here in Washington, D.C. It's the 14th of November in the afternoon. Now, having just heard from Reverend Pinckney and some of these shocking things that are going on, but also a growing awareness and publicity, let us now go to Daniela Walls. She is, as you know from previous broadcasts, the president of the Tax Wall Street Party. And Daniela, what I think we probably ought to do is just a quick overview, sort of your take on the success of the Tax Wall Street Party in the recent elections, and then on to some more ideas about how to help Reverend Pinckney, which is also to help all of us who want to live in a government of laws rather than a reign of terror.
Hello, Webster. Sure. Let me get into what we've done so far and then get into how the party is mobilizing for Reverend Pinckney. So we can start by what we've learned so far. And the big thing we've learned is that the program works. The program has mass traction. We say that we have mass traction economic demands, and we do. I can see it. I could see it both on the ground in Nebraska and in Napa and in New York. When I spoke to people, sometimes people were too busy to stop, but every time they did stop and gave me a minute, the response was unanimous. I saw it firsthand on the streets from rural Nebraska north to Napa, California. The program is a winner. The average person on the street, I found, couldn't care less about campaign finance reform, radical environmentalism, or even, you know, reproductive rights and guns, all the stuff that the media wants us to believe. They want a few things. They want a good job, a better standard of living, a secure retirement, a better future for their kids, including they especially want their kids to go to college, and they're happy to put everything else on the back burner for these goals. So this last year with the campaigns, we had to improvise everything. I'm really proud of what we learned. We learned how to run candidates for federal office. That's a big accomplishment. We're super proud of what we accomplished. We now understand the legal requirements to run for office, how to get on a ballot, how to train petitioners. We know how to get press. We know how to market a campaign with some of these processes. In our first year, we did this, and we did some of these things, Webster, better than mainstream Democrats in the GOP. For example, our websites and our printed material was quantitatively far superior. So right now the party is experiencing a sort of if you build it, they will come. Candidates are coming forward from all of our 50 states. I have a map on the wall in my house now that I'm pinning names to. I've said this before, I think, well, we've talked about it, but there are any number, and I don't know how many there are, but there's an infinite number of things called paper parties where somebody makes a website and writes down a platform, but they never get to the stage that we did of actually running a candidate for federal office. In terms of a functioning political third parties. I'm sorry my phone's beeping. It's because it's away from the base.
It's okay. I think you're still okay.
Okay, there's a handful, and none that are really competing. Not like we seem to be in our first year, meaning James Hinton's 25% of the vote in California's 5th District congressional race is, by my count, higher than any third party this year or independent candidate in a national race, except for the guy who ran against Pat Roberts' seat in Kansas. But it's certainly higher than any first-time candidate. It was higher than Cindy Sheehan's 16%, who has a well-known name. And what's great is Hinton's votes per dollar was shocking. It was the highest in the country, meaning he only spent a few cents per vote for his 30,000 votes. Compare that to Bloomberg, who spent $185 per vote. So to me, what this says is one thing, the program works. And we've talked really quickly, and then I really want to get into Pinckney for the remainder of this. But there's that party called the After Party that was started by the Adbusters crew from Occupy.
Right.
And that's been getting a lot of hype and a lot of press, but that's nothing more than a paper party. They had no candidates. So just
right.
a bunch of guys who wrote down a platform. So we're not even in the same league with them anymore. So if you want to be a candidate, please write to me at textwallstreetparty@gmail.com. The best way to reach me is also Facebook. Facebook. Facebook.com/Daniela G. Walls. D-A-N-I-E-L-A-G-Walls. Also, write to Webster. Is that okay, Webster? Would you like to give out your...
Yes, sure. I explained that if you prefer to communicate via the Internet, go to Tarpley.net, and there's a speakers bureau. You go in there. There's a contact feature. You can send something directly to me. So whichever way you
right.
do it, we're gonna try to contact you as fast as we can. Please be patient, obviously, because
okay.
the demand is great.
And please put in the subject line, attention, all caps, candidate, your name, and your state. I am a candidate, all caps, attention. So if you don't get an immediate response, just keep knocking again and again until you do. Don't take it personally. It's just because we're focusing right now our energy for the next month on Reverend Pinckney. So Reverend Pinckney, I don't know if he let you know that his sentencing is December 15th. And Pinckney is the decisive struggle of our time. I've had to steer all of our volunteers in the party and all of our state affiliates towards helping Pinckney now, also all of our international affiliates this month because it's a real emergency. We have
right.
2 years for campaigning. This does not mean we are ignoring you. You are in my heart. I just have to re-steer this toward Pinckney. So this month, over the holidays, it's going to have to be all Pinckney. I've told all the new candidates, managers, activists, that, like we said, the candidates have 2 years, but Pinckney could go to jail after this 1 month. So
1 month. That's it.
Yeah. Yes, we have 1 month. That's it. So we have the Tax Wall Street, and I know you love this website, that we have all these international affiliates forming, and they're coalescing in different European countries. So if you are in another country and you're interested in communicating, again, contact us. Again, until we respond. And please contact Tarpley, especially because he wants to talk to our international affiliates. But right now, all of the international affiliates we have are going to their foreign ministries in their countries, and they are having them, as you call it, convoke, which means to call in, summon their U.S. ambassadors and say, we demand explanations from you about this outrageous human rights violation. Many people would say that the most effective organization is on the ground in Benton Harbor, and we would say that that is wrong. The most effective organization is not local, it's worldwide. This needs to be done right now. If you are in a foreign country, go to your foreign ministry and get the American ambassadors involved at the, and also use the OSCE. Google the OSCE. It stands for the Office of Security and Cooperation in Europe. Go to your foreign ministry, contact your American ambassador, and go to the OSCE Human Rights Division. If you would like to ask me for more instructions on how to do this from a foreign country, please contact Webster Tarpley through the Speakers Bureau or contact me and write in all caps, I'd like to, Reverend Pinckney, help from your respective country and your name. And we will get back. That will take first priority for the next month. And so that's where I'm at right now. Just contact us, and the attention's going to be on Pinckney.
Excellent.
We can get more into what we've learned.
I'm afraid the music is telling us that our time is up. Thank you, Daniela.
@gmail.com. Thank you. Bye-bye.
We'll see you soon in the near future. Probably weekly reports on the Pinckney mobilization. Back in a minute on World Crisis Radio. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. Now, we've got to speed it up. We've got quite a bit to cover and only two segments left. Here's our situation now. One additional element to add to this Republican Kerry Skull and Bones war coup. That is this question of who is the U.S. bombing. You remember on Friday, November 7th, 1 week ago, Washington Post front page above the fold, Syrian rebels reject report on airstrikes. And you'll recall in that one we had Charles Lister of the Brookings Institution Doha Center in Qatar saying that this was a huge turning point. The U.S. had bombed Nusra in addition to ISIS, and they reported all kinds of rage among various terrorist circles. And this guy then raving, quote, the U.S. may now have lost Syria, says this guy Lister in his Twitter account. We also have a look at the CBS News is maybe clearer. CBS News on November 6th, U.S. bombs ISIS foes in Syria. And the idea is that the U.S. is bombing the Al-Qaeda branch in Syria. That means Nusra and a huge brouhaha. Some guy saying, we're tired of people saying they're coming to help us and then they kill us because he's a terrorist fighting against Assad. He expects the U.S. to help. Maybe he was promised that by Walnuts McCain. You get the idea. So there's another factor, right, saying essentially the pro-terrorist people saying, you know, we've got to get in there and save our terrorist assets, our secret army. Otherwise, who knows what happens after that. All right. Now, a lot of high-level diplomacy. Okay, we've just had the various leaders, right, meaning Putin, President Xi, Obama in Beijing. They then go on to the, that was APEC. Then they go on to ASEAN in Burma and then the G20. The word is that the hosts, Australia, in a very monstrous exercise in lack of hospitality, that they're going to stage some kind of an incident against Putin. I'm afraid the Australian Prime Minister Tony Abbott is a fool. He said he wants to shirt front Putin. How dare you move the G20 to Geneva or someplace where they can guarantee a decent atmosphere. You cannot have the negotiations under those circumstances. Of course, a lot of hysteria that Russian warships can indeed sail all the way to Australia. Defense Minister Shoigu warning that it's necessary for Russia to conduct various kinds of reconnaissance operations in the Caribbean, the Gulf of Mexico, and so forth. Those are those bear bombers that come up over the Kola Peninsula and above Scandinavia, and they fly down the eastern coast of the United States in international airspace and then land in Cuba or someplace like this. Not so surprising. Cameron opening his yap, getting into the act, right? Perfide Albion, he says, the weaker Russia gets, the more assertive you are. Interesting, as we had hoped, when it comes to the European Union, specifically, right, they have those the monthly meetings of the prime ministers. Mogherini, the Italian woman who has taken over from the awful dumb cow Baroness Ashton, and Mogherini is cooling it. She's pro-Russian, and she is blocking the various nasty things that some people, especially the British Perfide Albion, are pushing. So this is panning out. Unfortunately, the government she left behind, the Renzi government, looking not so good. Putin, at the eve of this G20, saying, look, the G20 resolutions are not binding. They had promised to do things in the past that they didn't do, and sanctions, of course, hurt everybody. Russian media also points out, you remember this phantom submarine that the Swedish military said that they had found, this called up, of course, the memories of Whiskey on the Rocks back in the 1980s when a submarine really did run aground. There's also the, and so it turns out there probably was nothing there. This was all manufactured out of thin air. What a shame for Sweden. I thought you were supposed to be neutral. And then the Mistral, the, these amphibious assault ships built by France and sold to Russia. If the French don't deliver them, of course, then their reputation goes to hell. Who can trust such people? So all of that happening. Now, concerning the Middle East, the 24th of November is supposed to be the date at which the nuclear negotiations between the Permanent Five plus one Germany comes to a conclusion. A lot of people speculating it may simply be prolonged. We here absolutely support a U.S.-Iran or PERM 5 plus 1 nuclear deal with Iran. The name of the game here is war avoidance. And the demands, I think, are they're clearly unacceptable. You cannot tell a country you have to remain underdeveloped so that we keep you at least 1 year to nuclear breakout. It essentially means you can't get modern nuclear technology. You can't get any kind of modern technology. The Israeli position is that Iran must not be allowed to be a threshold state. Well, if that goes for Iran, does it go for Egypt too? Does it go for Turkey too? I think this is absolutely absurd. It is selective and vindictive, and it's going nowhere because Russia has now announced that they will be building a total of 8 nuclear reactors, quite possibly, starting with 2 and then most likely 6 more over time. And I would just point this out. In terms of economic development, what's behind the scenes at that G20? There is a demand from the less developed countries for $1 trillion of infrastructure investment. That's good. The only way you're going to get that at a decent rate, close to zero, since there's clearly an asset which can serve as collateral, the only way you're going to get that is if it's done by nationalizing the central banks. A revived export-import bank could also play a big role, but here you're going to have some kind of an international authority. Please look at Surviving the Cataclysm, where I write about the multilateral development bank, the true replacement of the International Monetary Fund. Of course, now that we have the BRICS bank, why does the BRICS bank not step in? Unfortunately, they don't have the trillion. But between the U.S., Japan, and the West, you could get to a trillion. The other one is the International Energy Agency has announced their study that between 2015 and 2040, about 200 aging nuclear reactors have got to be decommissioned, shut down, and dismantled. This is absolutely a good idea, that Fukushima could only happen with a 50-year-old reactor. You wouldn't drive a 50-year-old car. How in God's name can you deal with a 50-year-old flawed design from General Electric? 44% of these reactors are in the European Union, 16% the U.S., 12% Japan. So there's investment of about $100 billion just to decommission these reactors. They've then got to be replaced by what? By high-temperature, fourth-generation, pebble-bed nuclear reactors of the most modern type. And we'll catch up on that in just a second here on World Crisis Radio. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. So we're just going through the tremendous energy needs of the world in terms of modern energy. We've got another solar cell and or windmill company, which is collapsing. But on the other side of the ledger, China is building nuclear reactors. India is building nuclear reactors. Russia is building nuclear reactors for Iran. South Korea, ROK, building nuclear reactors. The British Perfide Albion is building nuclear reactors. United Arab Emirates, always a favorite at the Washington Post. Belarus and so forth. 65 countries that don't have nuclear reactors are actively considering building them, and probably 12 to 15 are very far along the road of deciding to build. Here's the future. You cut yourself off from that, and you're essentially anthropological research material. And that's not something you want to be. If you want to be a modern state, you better have the full nuclear cycle, as the Iranians and others have understood. And what if you're a left liberal mushhead here in the United States? You're going to go to the Iranians and say, my imperialist government and the Israelis are right. You shouldn't have any nuclear capabilities. It's absolutely ridiculous. Now, therefore, Obama's deal. This is a marché des dupes, a market of dupes, where the Chinese are duping Obama. Oh, my God. This was set up by Rice, we're told. The German ambassador here is yelling, bravo, chapeau, for Rice and company. And look at this, this obviously ridiculous, right? The premise is ridiculous in the sense that, given the medieval warm period, there is very powerful reason to think that this is not man-made, that it's caused by solar activity, the various maxima and minima of the sunspot cycle and related aspects of solar activity. That's the explanation that appears to me to be most plausible. But now we're told the U.S. has to cut 28% off the 2005 level by 2025. So minus 28% by the U.S. All that has to be done by 2025. And China doesn't have to do anything until 2030 when they have to peak. From that point, they have to go down, but we're not told what. This is what in Central European diplomatic parlance you would call die Vorleistungen. And they're ridiculous. It's a market of dupes. You're going to be left high and dry. It's ridiculous. And of course, China would have good reason to proceed anyway to replace those coal fire plants, but they are continuing. Perhaps in a more peaceful world, it would be possible to solve that. But this is obviously a piece of nonsense. Now, Obama, the domestic politics of the U.S., in addition to the attempted Republican and Kerry war coup, call it the McCain-Kerry coup, immigration. Yes, Obama should indeed sign powerful executive orders. Stop deportations. One of the criteria in the old Helsinki 1975 that we've been talking about is family unification, Familien Zusammenführung und menschliche Erleichterungen. At that time it was im geteilten Deutschland. Today it's family unification. One of the aspects is supposedly that some of the child refugees from Central America that came this year will receive humane treatment. And, of course, once people are here, you cannot deny them health, education, and welfare. Suppose you do that. Say you don't get any medical care. With that, you have breached the anti-epidemic line of defense of humanity. It's absolutely insane. Is there no end to the vindictiveness and stupidity of the Republican base, terrified though they are and all that? I'm sorry, it's still no good. Now, the one thing I would object to is the visa that allows the technocrat to come here and get special treatment. There's plenty of unemployment, and people here need to be trained. But this is what Obama should have been doing before. You make the executive order public, you will then see convulsions, actually using a word from the 1950s, conniptions. The conniption fits of the Republicans will then occur. You can split the Republicans, you can split the corporate and country club against the gutter snipe and the Tea Party branch of this thing. You can also split the Republicans from their own money bags, because the money bags obviously want to use immigrant labor to undercut the existence of unions. And now here's my trifecta. You want to make this work. You have to make it work. You need a labor force. You want to compete with China? Well, again, you better learn some Spanish. Otherwise, you'll be taking orders in Chinese. Those are the alternatives. Unfortunately, these aging white reactionaries are not prolific enough to keep things going. Maybe they should have thought of that. But there we are. But the trifecta, in order to supplement anything that Obama's likely to think of, we demand a $15 minimum wage across the board. We want a 15% protective tariff, 15-15, and we want to repeal the Taft-Hartley Act so that unions can be readily formed even in southern states and places of this type. So the idea is, yes, indeed, Obama, set up a confrontation with the Republicans, lead them through prepared fields of political fire, and decimate them. Destroy the Republican Party in place. If Obama had been doing that starting in the, let's say, November-December 2012 period, the Republican Party could already be on its way to destruction instead of presiding over this kind of situation. Then, on December 11th, the legislation to fund the government runs out. Will the Republicans, and of course the Tea Party is already screaming that they want it, will they shut down the government and make themselves the object of more hatred, deserved hatred? They are the party of national sabotage. How dare they come forward and say, oh, that's the red flag. Oh, you're going to poison the well. These are the wreckers. These are the saboteurs of the state. We want the Export-Import Bank. We want full funding of all the social safety net. No rotten compromises. Let's just look at one. We are told now that the Supreme Court is about to go back to Obamacare and try to use a typo to get rid of it. I warned you, the permanent austerity dictatorship is coming. The Supremes, the Rats Cabal, Robert Salito, Thomas and Scalia are a key part. And in that text, we're told that it depends on this. Quote, exchanges established by the state. Well, the state. You know, the state can mean one thing in the U.S., right? The individual states, New York and California and so forth. But the state can also mean the government, as in such expressions as a compelling state interest. That means government in general, or state secrets, secrets of government in general, or state scarlet, and so on down the line. If we read exchanges established by the state, that can mean government at any level. And I'm saying this because we know that Scalia is an exponent of textualism. Textualism is even worse than originalism. Originalism is for fools. Textualists is for morons, I guess. It's even worse. Now, let's see what else we can point to. I guess the question of coal, right? The role of coal in the election. My view would be this. The use of coal for fuel is probably not the best use. My long-term orientation here is coal should be used for petrochemical purposes, for things like plastics and other things. This would allow you to keep the demand for coal high, but not have to burn all the coal. And I guess next week we're going to get to Gruber and his story that the American voter is stupid. And I'm afraid we need a rather differentiated discussion of that. Remember that I'm at tarpley.net in the Speakers Bureau feature. Go in there, talk to me, campaign managers, candidates, supporters of any kind. Do what you can for Pinckney, and we will see you next week on World Crisis Radio.